joined in studio with Jerry Harper of the Harper's Brother Family Nursery Tradition. 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old now? How old?
Not quite 80.
Not quite 80. But it's right at 70, yeah, if I remember right. Yep, yeah. Congratulations. Yep. 70 years in business.
Yeah, I'm feeling old. No, it was way before me that it got started. I'm not that old.
Let's bring Cheryl into the conversation. Wants to talk about replacing trees that have recently been lost to storm damage. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. I really enjoy your show. Thank you for having me on here. Yes, recently in Glendale, we had a really bad storm, and we lost all four of our Chilean mesquite trees in the front yard. We need to replace them. Should we go with the same thing again, and what can we do to solve the problem so it doesn't occur again?
Okay. Well, it's a good tree, Chilean mesquite, if you're looking for a desert-type tree. Very fast-growing tree that you might want to spend a little more time kind of thinning and trimming as it grows. Don't over-trim it, but kind of keep it thinned out so that the air and the wind can move through it. And then another big problem that people have with desert trees, and especially, Chilean mesquites are very bryophytic. They love water. The more water you give them, the faster they're going to grow. So you don't want to overwater them, and you want to make sure that as that tree gets more and more mature, that take that water and bring it out to where the drip line is, and don't keep that water where it was when you first planted it. So originally when you plant that tree, that drip or that bubbler is going to be right at the trunk of the tree. And this is a real common problem with drip irrigation, that people don't realize that because that water is so efficiently put on right there and just goes straight down into the ground where that emitter is, then it becomes a very inefficient way to water as that tree grows away from its water source. So you want to make sure that you water deep, slow, and as infrequent as possible. Don't push the water too much and push the growth too much. You want to make sure that that trunk catches up or stays up with the canopy as the canopy's growing, or the canopies get too heavy for the maturity of the trunk. So other than that, there are a lot of different other varieties. You know, the real common one right now that everybody's planting is the hybrid Palo Verde. There's different cultivars of that that are also a thornless type tree, if that's why you wanted a Chilean mesquite, because it's a thornless type mesquite. Everybody wants thornless, so you might look at the Palo Verde. But same thing, you know, if you give them too much water, if you too much love, then that's not necessarily a good thing. You want to make sure that you don't get too, impatient about it becoming a big tree by giving it too much water.
You got to remember, a mesquite is a weed. A mesquite is a bush, and we make it into trees.
Well, that is true. I mean, as a matter of fact, I have this conversation with a lot of times. That one of my biggest frustrations in my industry as a landscape professional is that we really don't have good trees here. Or sometimes in cases, we don't have trees at all here. I mean, we do have trees. We have Chinese elms, and we've got Chinese pistachios, and we've got live oaks. But they don't always look good in a desert landscape. So when you go to the desert landscape side of it and you start picking trees, you really are picking bushes. They are not a tree, and we make them into trees. You're right.
In your landscape profession, you had said, you know, obviously with a drip, you've got to move it out. And it's really amazing when you stop and look up how far out those canopies get, how quick on mesquites. I mean, you've got to constantly, and I always try and keep my drip ahead out of the canopy a little bit, so the roots, you know, are searching for that water out ahead of the canopy to really, I don't know if it's doing it, but in my mind, I'm making the roots stretch farther than the canopy just to make it stable. Is that what you install as drip, or do you have another type of irrigation that you like to?
Yeah, there's it's all pretty much drip that we're putting in, but there are what we call inline emitters. It looks more like a quarter inch tubing, but it has an emitter inside the quarter inch tubing, and sometimes with trees, the best thing to do is use this type of material and you encircle the whole drip line of the tree with that. Because sometimes it's hit and miss. Going back to a comment you made about searching, roots don't search for water. Okay, that's a big fallacy. I remember my freshman year of college, horticulture 101. The professor put it this way. He said, if you could plant a tree upside down and make it live, what's going to happen? Well, the roots are going to turn around and grow down, and the shoots are going to turn around the other way and grow up. And that's what they do. Roots grow down and shoots grow up. And they don't have noses, they don't have taste buds, and they don't necessarily seek water. But that's so it's important for us to put the water where it needs to be. We can make it easier for the roots to go through the soil structure if there's moisture and they'll grow better. But we can't like say, okay, I want the roots to grow deep, so I'm going to water deep. That's not necessarily why we're watering deep. We're watering deep because we're leaching salts out of the root zone and stuff like that. But we're not necessarily saying, okay, I'm going to make this a deep-rooted plant by watering deeper. But the circling of the tree with the inline type of emitter allows for a water source every 6 inches to a foot all the way around the drip line, rather than saying, well, I'm going to put a drip emitter here and then 10 feet over here and then 10 feet over here and 10 feet over here and try to circle the tree with the drip emitter every 10 or 15 feet, not knowing if that root's anywhere near that 10 feet. short of watering really deep and long and making that water then go out into the, you know, away from the its drip emitter, which helps also. But I like the inline emitter idea.
We're going to bring Richard into the conversation while we're on the topics of drip, because he has a question for us regarding his system. Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you. I live down in Tucson, about 2,100 foot where I'm at. And I'm wondering, how deep should I bury the main lines and the drip feeders and all in order to keep from having it freeze up and break the pipe during winter?
All right, something we don't normally have to worry too much about here, but you might down there a little bit, and it does happen periodically here. If you're using polyethylene type of a pipe, that and in colder climates they're starting to use more and more of the poly, which is what the black pipe that we see, the drip, more of a drip type pipe. They use that pipe in colder climates, not like we use it here for convenience, but they use it because it's more flexible, so that it's not as rigid of a pipe as PVC is, so that it doesn't get brittle when it's hard and when it does freeze. So it allows for a little more flexing if it does freeze. Typically, in southern Arizona, whether it be Phoenix or Tucson, we don't have to worry about going too deep in the soil. Even if we get a heavy freeze on the surface, we're not necessarily freezing to a big depth in the ground. So you should be okay with about 6 inches depth. That would be enough insulation right there for most pipes. Most pipes that freeze here or even in Tucson are the pipes that are exposed and above ground. Would you guys agree with that? Because being in the building industry, you probably deal with more of that.
The freeze line at the top of Humphrey's Peak is 4.5 inches.
Yeah. Yeah. So the soil's a great insulator. Yeah,
it is a great insulator. 5-6 inches deep would be plenty. If freezing is what he's worried about, it's really going to be the exposed components, the vacuum breaker, the supply line, the shutoff valve, the valve box that's exposed.
And most of the case, those are the plastic parts within the vacuum breaker that break. It's not it's very rarely the copper pipe that bursts. It's the plastic parts inside.
I think you're okay, Richard. That is what I'm hearing.
Now, I know Chris Wellborn of Ascente Landscaping up in Yavapai County. I mean, they have to build in winter drains for the irrigation system. And in sometime after Halloween, they're actually going to the low point of their irrigation system. They're opening a line and they're draining it and bleeding it completely for the season.
In Denver, I have contacts in Denver. They blow their lines out at the end of the season. They actually take air and blow their lines out. But I don't think you'd ever have to really do that.
Not at 2,100 feet in Tucson. Yeah. I think you're 6 inches deep. You protect your vacuum breaker, exposed pipes under heavy freezes, and you'll be all set. Thanks for the call, Richard.
As we move to Josh, you can dial in at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U if you'd like to get your landscape garden question answered. Josh, what are you working on today?
I'm building a raised garden bed in an area of my yard that will be 50% shaded, and I'm wondering if it's too early to start planting and what type of soil I should get to put in there.
Well, you know, right in the middle of the winter gardening season, and the great thing about winter gardening is that there are quick crops. You know, you can plant, you know, different leafy type lettuces and certain, most are. Let's take carrots, for example. They take a long time. But a lot of our leafy crops, you can grow several generations within one winter gardening season. So you definitely can continue to plant our winter type vegetables. And then, you know what? I'm always a big believer of put a tomato in early and hope it doesn't freeze. And if it does, start over again. So if you can find tomatoes even this time of the year, put one in. Try to cover it and protect it if it's a cold night. But we're talking about a crop that you only get so many months before it gets too hot for that tomato to produce any more fruit. So the earlier you can get it in, the more fruit you're going to end up with in the spring and the early summer. So it's not too early to plant even tomatoes, but you certainly can plant most of your winter vegetables still.
You had said you're protecting it, covering it from a frost. I use heat lamps on my chickens. Could I put one of those over on the tomato plant at night?
Yeah, I mean, and if you have a heat source, then you could even put plastic over the top of it. We don't recommend that if you don't, because it could actually make it colder. But, just a frost cloth draped over the top of it, or if you've got some sort of a heat source, you might even put a plastic over it and then have that plastic drape all the way to the ground and maybe even cover the edges of the plastic up with the soil around it and create a little greenhouse environment.
Now, being the builder of the group here, I want to talk to Josh about what is he gonna build his raised planter out of. Josh, what material are you thinking about?
I just have the concrete blocks.
You are the man. You are the man. I'll tell you, y'all install an awful lot of retaining walls and raised planters and stuff like that. I mean, I think for the money and for the trouble and for the permanent, you just can't beat the Bellegarde dry stack retaining wall system. You put a geotech material behind it. You run it up five or six courses. You have 12 to 18 inches worth of dirt in there, put a little sprinkler system in there, and it's easy to drape and cover and protect from frost. And then I will never, ever do an in-ground garden again.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. And with products like that, they're easy to install, and they look good. The thing that I know we don't have much time, but the thing that concerned me the most about your statement was that it's about 50% in shade. That's one thing you're going to want to watch, because gardens do like sun. So just make sure it has enough sun.
And he still has one more question. We'll get on the back on the side of the break. Soil. Does he just go out to the desert and shovel a bunch into his pickup truck, or what kind of soil prep are we going to do? And Josh will answer that right after this.